Welcome to the Rand In Podcast with Rafi and
Andra, podcast where we explore how the random affects you every day. Ta-da!
Okay, so welcome back to the Rand In Podcast. It's season two still. Hooray!
Yay!
Hey, wait. Now we can do... Oh, that's right.
It's essential. That's how you know it's professional.
There you go. We may have gotten a soundboard, like it's a random app with the microphone called Rode Connect, and now we have like the sound effects that we can play during the episode. This changes everything. Windows.
If you weren't annoying before, you will be now.
Or listen to crickets. So today it's going to be a mini-sode. So for the first mini-sode, Chandra's decided that he wants to talk about charitable funds. So Chandra, why charitable funds?
Well, considering our generous listener that donated their two iPhones.
Oh, yeah.
So for a bit of context, one of our users very kindly donated two iPhones.
Listeners,
not customers. they donated two iPhones to us, which were pretty smashed up.
Okay, I'll stop.
Yeah, we're going to have to work out how to use that better. So with those two iPhones, they were pretty smashed up and we didn't think there'd be much for it, but ended up getting $600 out of both of them. And they were talking about, okay, where should we donate the money to?
Your internet's gone.
Sounds like
again.
We should donate the money to internet. Hello? We should donate the money to internet in Perth, clearly.
Yeah, hang on, that's better. Yeah.
So we were just talking about where should we donate this money to? And that sort of raised the conversation of charities.
And how much did we raise? It just started to static out when you were saying that.
So we've got a total of $600.
And that was that profit, was it?
Profit, yeah. So after all of our costs and everything, so a decent amount.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is not too bad, not too bad. So now the question becomes, where do we give the money? And then this whole thing about what are the different charities and how do each of us donate to charities came up. I thought it'd be an interesting one in terms of there's a lot more to charities than I realized when I first started looking into it. I'm sure everyone's sort of seen the first time around, there's the cat charity. if you're watching on video, you will see that there is currently a cat on your screen.
The cat was, I was like, what is that in, like, just tickling my leg? And I realized Luna the cat had climbed onto some of the boxes underneath my desk. So I have to give her a pat. But anyway, continue. Cat charities are great.
Cat charities are great. But it kind of comes to one of the points. It's like, do you have an appealing charity versus an evidence-based charity? This is something that is familiar.
What do you mean by an appealing charity?
So one that basically spends a lot on marketing, or one that you can easily relate to. And so it
What's
makes
an example?
Sense to you. So for example, there are pet charities as well. So you have a pet and you know you really care about your pets, you might want to donate to the local RSPCA or, you know, that sort of organization. And so it's one that is fairly appealing to people. And then there's, on the very other end of the spectrum, there's evidence-based sort of charities, which try to look to see what's the evidence, what's the one that's going to have the best bang for buck, and go from there. And then there's a whole bunch of charities in between as well. I thought that might be something interesting.
Yeah. As a more broader thing, what do you think about society in large needing charities to begin with? Like, they're clearly solving something, right? But we've got corporations and we've got government. Should we have charities? Should we not figure out another construct where it's not just based on public good to solve these problems?
Well, you could sort of say that's kind of what the function of government is, i.e., to share resources equitably between a whole group of people. But there's also no reason that a group of people can't do that themselves as well. And that's essentially the role that I see charities sort of filling is, yes, governments can redistribute wealth and kind of, you know, you have this whole socialism, capitalism kind of balance there as well. And it's like communism in theory sounds great, but, you know, not particularly well executed in many places.
Well, it's like anything, right? Like, you know, capitalism to the nth degree would basically mean that what's the most amount of capital you can get for the service, right? Like capitalism, if you left it unchecked, leads to monopolies just naturally because, like, you know, you would go and acquire all the stuff and you'd stifle all the innovation. Like you basically get to oligopoly unless you have some baseline rules of capitalism, but not too far. Like you'd never leave a company totally unchecked, right? And it's like government, but not too far, because government fully governing, it usually ends up somewhere in the communism matrix or a dictatorship or something like that. So it's like that checks and balances thing. But yeah, I was kind of, in a way, in my head anyway, charities are an extension of the local tribe, if you like. So it's a your family unit, right? There are all these insensible things that you do, look after your parents, or, you know, your brother needs a favor or your sister needs that. It's that, but just at a slightly broader scale. So instead of it just being directly blood relatives or people, you know, or friends and whatnot, it extends to random strangers. Because, you know, there was something that caught my attention was just recently, this guy basically had a fall in Paris and just couldn't get up and no one helped him. And he died of hypothermia. And turns out it wasn't just some homeless guy. It was this famous photographer. But as a society, like, it's caused a bit of a stir over there going, hang on, no. The only person who actually called the authorities was a homeless guy who was like, hey, you're not one of the regulars. Like, so it rang, but he was too far gone by that stage. Like, I think he was still alive, but by the time they took him to hospital. And there's these little stories of this, like, you know, there was one in China. Every country has some version of this. And, you know, so it's kind of like, I kind of see it as like society's always had the help, the good, like be the good Samaritan. And the charity seemed like, well, how do you help people when you actually need funds to help those people?
Well, it's an interesting one because it sort of leads on to that whole concept of local charities versus, you know, global charities. Because it's, if you look at it, as you said, like before, when it was tribes of people, everyone sort of, you know, chips out to look after the tribe. But the interesting thing is over time now, the definition of your tribe has kind of, it is a bit blurred because you're aware that actually there's a whole bunch of humans around the world. And so is your tribe all people, or is it just, you know, people in your local neighborhood, for example? And you can see that in some patterns of giving as well, where some people will donate to global charities, whereas others will much more favor local charities. And it's not necessarily a right wrong thing, but it's just a kind of, I suppose, where you feel like you should be helping out the most.
Yeah. And to an extent, I suppose it's up to the individual, right? Like, it's whatever. You can't, if charity becomes mandated, it's just a tax. So charity is like voluntary giving. Yeah. But like, you know, like if you have it as a totally up to you kind of giving, then you're kind of obligated to, well, you're not obligated to, but you're more likely to give it to something that you care about. Like, for example, like in being Muslim, there's a concept called zakat, which is like, I can't remember the technical definition of it, but it's like 2.5% either of net worth or earning that you have to donate on top of any taxes or whatever. So you basically have this fixed amount in gold, I think, like whatever this amount is in gold. This is like the inflation hedge, right? So it's like this amount of gold, whatever that is over time. So that is whatever is tax-free. So that's like set, and everything above that, take 2.5% and donate it. And it has to be to the needy, but it's kind of like a, I don't think if it actually specifies that it has to be directly right, like in your community, but there is an element of look after your immediate community and then broaden out depending on your means. Like that's kind of like the vibe of it. So it kind of encourages a bit of both.
Yeah. And I think, for example, a lot of people would also feel more comfortable, for example, giving to local charities where you can sort of see the immediate impact as well.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. So do you have any examples of what's
evidence-based? Yeah, on the other end of the spectrum, I thought I'd highlight one called GiveWell. So they're a fairly large organization that does a lot of philanthropic giving. And for example, I think in 2020, they raised like $500 million or something to donate. So one of the problems is when you have a lot of money and you want to donate it, and this attracts people who want to, for example, give money in a way that you can have a measurable outcome. And obviously one of the cons is then it immediately excludes all charities that can't actually measure a tangible outcome. But for example, their criteria for giving is they look for places that firstly, you can actually generate evidence to demonstrate measurable outcomes. So for example, a simple one that is often at the top of their list is a malaria foundation one, basically giving out malaria nets. So you can say, okay, cool. If you give out X number of nets, how many deaths do you prevent from malaria-related diseases? And then the cost effectiveness of that, you can work out as well. Because, well, how much does it cost to get one net to one person? Because that can incorporate all of your costs of the net, the market, you know, admin, all that sort of stuff. And how much, you know, impact does it make? And impact is a subjective thing, but if anybody's in the medical world and things, you know, you can look at things like quality adjusted life years or just simply number of lives saved. They also look at important things like transparency, obviously, like and that sort of goes back to the, can you get the information from the organization? But one of the really interesting ones, which I guess I never thought of before, is room to take funding, because now organizations like GiveWell have a lot of money. So if you have $500 million to donate somewhere, if you give it to one organization, it's very unlikely that organization, which was very lean and efficient and very, very good at delivering effective measurements, you suddenly give them $100 million, are they going to be just as effective? And not many organizations can do that.
Yeah, I suppose it's like literally like if you have like a little scooter and you strap a jet engine, it'll go fast, but it's probably not going to achieve the aim that you want it to.
Yeah, exactly. So that was an interesting one, I thought, in terms of criteria.
Random interlude.
And then they also sort of look at big problems. You know, what are some? And ultimately, and this leads to it being fairly health biased, because it's what are problems that have a large burden is not particularly well addressed already. And, you know, could potentially actually be addressed. And what they do is they basically spend their time, and they do take philanthropic donations themselves, to conduct the research on all the different organizations. And their argument being, okay, well, us spending that money to create the research means that, well, we can now direct that funding to the best possible place for the biggest impact.
Not only that, I think that the fact that there is an organization that's doing the research sets like a yardstick for others. Like if there is someone who's looking at transparency, then it's setting a standard so that other charities have to jump on board and have a dashboard of this is how much we're spending. It creates like a code of conduct, if you like.
And also creates a carrot as well, because then if you do create that transparency and that ability, like, oh, maybe we'll be able to get some funding from these organizations that are now, you know, following the evidence base of giving.
Yes. And it's like, maybe they will give us well from GiveWell.
You're waiting to use that soundboard. It will be an interesting season.
But yeah, I got to say, like, because of the Australian Open, I started watching TV for the first time in like forever. And half the ads are the sponsors and the other half are charities. And I was just like, wow. But what I've noticed is, you know, this is leading into a few other things. Like, obviously, charities have to raise money. And there's a lot of ads, but what I've noticed distinctly is like last period that I used to watch TV regularly, it was probably like 10, 15 years ago. And a lot of the World Vision stuff has gone down. And lot of the ones that are, yeah, it's not like, oh, people are starving in Africa. That is less so. It's like people are less educated or they're struggling to, well, actually the one that I found surprising is it's like, you know, Australia, I don't know, 1 in 10, I can't remember the exact stat, but something like 5 to 10% of kids in Australia are supposedly below the poverty line and they don't have supplies for school and uniform and all that, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, have we changed the definition of poverty? Because I'm pretty sure that used to be like, you can't put food and get enough, like, you know, or like confusing food and famine. But like, I thought back then it was, you have no clothes, not you don't have the right clothes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously it scales to the society and it's just as damaging. Like if you are going to wear tattered clothes or not the right clothes to a school where everyone else is wearing the correct thing, you're probably going to get picked on and it does do psychological damage. Or if you don't have the tools to do your homework, like, how are you going to do it, right? Like, not to denigrate any of that, but it just seems like the standards of, like, it used to be like they have no shirt. Now like, they don't have the right shirt. Like, you know, like things have changed. And mainly, I don't know if it's just, maybe it's just, that's how the definition always was. I just found it very stark looking at it like 10, 15 years ago versus now. And just seeing that. And it was also a lot of animal welfare ones versus what it used to be, because it was almost always either disaster stuff back then or famine or something along those lines. And this is a lot more education. I mean, you know, though it says poverty, like it is relative poverty. It's not compared to the whole world adjusted, I would say. But yeah, I found it really interesting that those are the ads currently during this year. And like, I'm assuming this is pretty expensive time. Like it's a premier world broadcast sporting event. It's a Grand Slam.
And I guess that sort of comes back again to the things about, oh, okay, well, is the charity effective or not? And I guess at the end of the day, they spend that much money on marketing but still demonstrate that their outcomes are very good. Is that a bad thing? And it's sort of similar to, I think you mentioned about paying commissions, people collecting money, you know, trying to get you to sign up for the charity and then
I don't think we mentioned that during the episode itself.
Well, that's a thing.
So it's like, so what I was saying was, I didn't realize that, you know, when you go for a walk and there's those random people trying to sign you up for the charities, like they're obviously doing good, but they also need to be paid because they're at work and standing out in the hot sun, but they're largely paid via commission structure. So in fact, the first year, everyone's got a different one. So the one I signed up to like that, because I was, so it was only effective once for me. And it was because I was intending to sign up to sponsor a child anyway. And they just happened to catch me and like, oh, well, like I could go home and do this, but they're here right now. I'll sign up.
Yep.
And the ones, I've got a few charities that I donate to and they are relatively non-evidence-based, but we'll get to why in a sec. So I signed up, but then I think years later, I was just looking them up because you told me about GiveWell, or someone did anyway. And I was just looking up what their effectiveness is. And it's like, oh, they actually pay a pretty high rate of commission to the sign-up people. I'm like, what? It never occurred to me that that's the model that they operate on. I think like some huge fraction of the first 6 months or the first year goes to like the person who signed you up. But at the same time, like, had they not, maybe I would have taken, like, I was a fairly motivated person that wanted to give to that specific charity and I hadn't done it for months and months and months. And so I'm like, you know, they did work. They, for whatever reason, decided that having a long conversation was the definition of work. I was like, look, I would have done it in 2 minutes and be done with it. But they insisted on a long chat, but hey, like, you know, it works for different people. Yeah, you know, they were standing out there and they have to eat as well. So, yeah. But yeah, so I don't know. The commissions thing made me feel a bit, but at the same time, you still got to pay for work.
Yeah. I think that's where sort of, for me anyway, the cost effectiveness thing comes in, because at the end of the day, if it's cost effectively delivering outcomes, kind of hard to argue with that.
Hmm. Yeah. So do you donate regularly or anything, or?
Yeah. So there's a version of GiveWell. Just the only problem with GiveWell is just because it's not Australian based. There's another one called Life You Can Save, but what I do is basically go on GiveWell, have a look what their recommended charities are, and then I either donate to those charities directly, or there's another company called Life You Can Save, which is a similar kind of setup that has Australian sort of numbers to make it a donation. So that's the ones that I do primarily. It's a little bit, it's also kind of like partly lazy for me as well, because I'm like, I feel like it's important, but I don't really have the time to research everything myself either.
No, but that's fair.
I do like leveraging the fact that somebody is doing the research. And for me personally, it fits in with sort of what I tend to do. So even though it's not a for everyone thing, for me, I tend to sort of go, okay, cool. Let's work out what's the data, what's the evidence, and what's the best thing to do. So it kind of fits in with everything else I do, as opposed to local charities, which I can totally understand, but it's just not a me thing.
Yeah, no, see, I'm probably on that side of it. Not so much that I haven't done the evidence part, but so my take on it is slightly different. So one of the ones was I wanted to sponsor a child in Bangladesh because that's where I'm from. And it's just pure genetic lottery that I just happened to be born to my parents. And actually one of the most random things of this week has been that my old primary school friends found each other and we've got a WhatsApp group and we're just sharing photos. And I was like, we've just ended up in, like, you know, this is before the internet. We're in a different continent and they all live in different continents now. And it's just, you know, we're just sort of catching up. But it's just pure genetic lottery that I got born into this family versus literally just down the road. I could have been someone who was just like a manual laborer and have a fairly different life. So I wanted to specifically sponsor a child who was within like 100 kilometer radius of where I grew up. And just because I'm like, if there's going to be a RANDIN function, I want to add a RANDIN function to that geographic thing because I got it. This is me passing it on, you know?
Yeah. Somebody else gets a random crack at it.
Yeah. Like, and this is someone who might not have been able to go to school and they get an opportunity, right? Because that's all you can really do. You can't control the outcome. You just can rand into it so that it skews a bit more favorably. And to me, that was the very first charity I donated to. It's through Plan International. And basically just because that was the most meaningful thing. Like if you ask me anything, it's like, no, that's what I want to do because I feel like that was what I was a recipient and I really wanted to pay it forward. And to this day, I think one of the childs, because I've been doing this since I was an intern. So I think one actually grew up. So they've actually switched it to another child. But you know, like that, it has immense meaning to me for, to be able to do that, to go, yep. And in fact, the fact that I can geo-target it to where I was born and within that circle and go, yeah, here you go. Like it just, for whatever reason, just makes charitable giving enjoyable, which I suppose is a positive feedback loop.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. Like if it's something that you genuinely believe in, you're much more likely to actually make donations as opposed to, even though something may logically make more sense, you might be like, nah, I don't really feel a connection and not do it.
Yeah. So that was one of the main reasons. And the other ones that I routinely donate to are less charitable and more emotive. And specifically for the marketing thing is like, if there is, it's like the whole thing where it's like, if one child dies, it's a tragedy. If it's 100 million, it's a statistic, like that thing where people, like humans, generally think of everything in terms of relatable small scale stories. Yeah. So this is part of the reason I was like reading that storytelling book as like Storyworthy. And all the ads on TV, it's always like, can you help this one person? And like, I'm sure you're telling me there's more, but we're only going to focus on one sad looking child or one dog. It's like 10,000 dogs a day. It's like, yeah, but this one dog is what makes it emotive, right? So one of the times that I most do charitable givings during Ramadan, so usually because I've got a fast and whatnot, and I thought, hey, this is very close to like the 40-hour famine. Instead of 40 hours, like 30 days of fasting through the day. So why don't I actually use that to raise money? And it was like a multi-pronged thing where I was like, look, I'm going to do it anyway. Might as well raise some money. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was, it's like, you know, Islam generally gets a bad name in the media. So I'm like, all right, I'll make it related to the religious thing. But then I was like, the thing that I don't like about Muslim sort of giving is that most of the Muslims that give it only give it to the Islamic charities. You know, so part of it is like, you know, you're still part of every country that you're in. So then I wanted to make it raise money because of a Islamic thing, but give it to a directly measurable within visible sort of spectrum stuff of my local community. And in Melbourne, there's a increasing amount of homelessness. So that's the one I targeted. So like the city of Melbourne actually has some guidelines for good charities and what they're trying to do. And so though it's not evidence-based, it doesn't do as much research, but this is kind of like the council approved ones, because there's guys who go around giving people jackets and blankets and stuff. And if you look through the city council thing, they're like, can you please not do that? Because they move, then we just have to go clean up all these jackets and blankets that are left behind, right? And they've been used, and it's not cost effective to get them clean to send them out again. Rather, give to these ones. Like, these guys do it, but it's slightly like, you know, they've got their stuff. So that's like my version of it. And I think for what I'm trying to do, it makes a bit more sense, because it's like this linked narrative. Like, I'm trying to solve this multi-pronged problem or change of public perception. You know, so, and it's, if it's not direct, it feeds into the stereotype of like people in society being the other versus not. And yeah, so I suppose it depends on your take of it. And the other part of it is like, one thing I realized was part of the Ramadan funds always go to a soup kitchen. Because it being during winter, during Ramadan, and I'm like, man, it's pretty freaking cold. I would want like a warm cup of soup if I could, right? Because one of the charities, the year's supply of running the soup kitchen is like $25,000. I'm like, and I've been raising about $2,000-ish per year, and I match one for one up to a certain amount. I'm like, that at least seems like you could scale that up and hit the target. Like, I'm never going to be able to raise like $50 million, right? Well, unless something magical happens, but I could probably get like, you know, it's not totally outside. Like, yes, it's 10X, but it's not 500X, you know, it's not 10,000X. Like, so
you could conceivably get to 25K there.
Yeah. And it seems like it's reasonable over time to try and hit that. Right. So, and there's something about being able to just go, yeah, look, we like as a, like a, you know, be it whoever's donated, da, 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 we funded a year's worth of something. The fact that you can fully commit to this funding goal, I think there's like a certain satisfaction, a certain like the human level thing. Like I would donate to, like if someone was like 80% there, like, yeah, go get it to 100%. Yeah. Right. Like that sort of, yeah. So yeah, that's my personal sort of giving take at the moment.
Makes sense. Well, yeah. I think now we have to decide where to give these $600 to.
All right. Yeah. Well, should we do it 50-50? Actually, I'll put it as a Spotify poll, and should we put it on the socials as well, and then we can do it before the next catch up one.
That sounds like a plan.
Okay. All right, with that, this episode... Actually, what I also want to know is where, if people have any other recommendations. Like,
where do you donate your money?
Yeah, so comments, email. It's still a podcast at photosbyraffy.com for now, until Chandra establishes a new email address for
this
us.
This still seems to be sorted out. Coming soon.
Or reach out on social media. People, we have gotten our very first Apple podcast review, and can we encourage you to do that, so that we're trying to get more interviewees for our podcast. So this will really, really help. And one random last minute update. So I was looking up what the average number of downloads, so at the 50% percentile, what's the average number of downloads per podcast? And we have just officially crossed that on average. That's 28 plays per episode. Our first episode still has ridiculously like hundreds of plays, like the worst episode ever.
What I'm hearing is we need to eat more during our episodes.
But our like counts have gone to the point that now we're at the 50 percentile mark. And from 50 to 75 is like, I think you have to go from 30 to I think about 70, and then you're in like the top 25 or top 15%. So thank you for those listening. And yeah, like, subscribe, don't turn on notifications, but please leave reviews. It's been, I'm not sure if that's helped yet, but it looks like the counts went up. Yeah. And the last one was quite positive too. We'll read it in the next episode. But until then, bye-bye.
See ya.
Let's see if this works again. Working?
Working on my end.